What is up, tennis fans? It's time for another season, another year of tennis bets into 2024 with the Australian Open just 2 days away from starting off. Tennis Bets is back to get you geared up for that tournament, as well as a lot of tennis going forward on the calendar. We've got the All-Star cast back again. Kenny Ducey, Pamela Maldonado, Zachary Cohen. Let's start with, down my diagonal direction from this $4 Zico, Zachary Cohen. Doing a lot of busy stuff in the offseason, but we're back into tennis mode. We're back into you as the court condition expert. So how do you handicap what we're seeing and what you're looking for leading up to this Australian Open?
Pretty much handicap it is. It's the fastest tournament, I think. I mean, I think it's between this and Washington, D.C. I think these are the two fastest ones. So if you have a big serve, you're going to probably be in good shape here. And if you play good defense, then you're probably going to be in good shape here too. I mean, it's hard to defend when the courts are this quick, but if you could do it, then you're in great shape.
Yeah, Kenny Ducey joining the show as well. And I know you've been tuned in late night hours on the East Coast time zone too, so it's a little interesting for you having to watch these lead-up events. But what stood out to you about the action in Brisbane, Auckland United Cup, and maybe what's changed as you've seen that for your thoughts on the Australian Open?
Well, welcome, or it's great to be here, and welcome to the 2024 season to you all. I'm very excited to get things started. Yes, I think you guys are total wimps on the West Coast. You guys go to bed and, you know, you don't understand how good you have it. You know, the matches are basically ending at 2 or 3 a.m. I'm up until, I would think I was up till 10 a.m. one night during the United Cup. These matches have been great. And that's the one thing I wanted to just say is what's really struck me this year versus other years. Yeah, we could talk about the court conditions and how Yuri Lehechka's a fraud, all that stuff. We'll get into it. But I think the biggest deal for me is that these 250s, at least on the ATP side, they've been WTA 500s, they've felt like such a big deal. Like the crowds have been great. You know, even watching the Runa Dimitrov final in Brisbane last week, I mean, that was like a very fun atmosphere. So I think the crowds have been great. There's a lot of excitement around this Aussie summer. I'm really looking forward to the tournament, but I think that's just been the biggest thing that stuck out to me is that these all feel like really important matches. And I think it's a testament to how much people love tennis in Australia.
There's no other sport really like this where you're starting after a quote unquote off season and you have one of the four tentpole grand slams so quickly. So I agree with that. That's a good point that it doesn't matter what the number is. Grigor and Holger felt like a 1,000 level match. Like it was that good. Pamela Maldonado, welcome as well to the show. Australian Open time, you know, way back when you were starting your tennis journey as a handicapper, you always said this was your time to shine.
And already I'm looking at first round of matches and I'm like, man, I love so many. How am I going to narrow it down? I think there's like a misconception. There's a lot of value to be had in like the transition periods, something like going straight from clay into the grass court season, because a lot of the players that did well on clay are being overvalued. It's kind of the same perspective here. Like it's, we've had a lot of people who have had time off coming off of injuries. So it really is look for the guys that are fresh and sharp who actually had an off season and can get value rather than like their name brand recognition. So there's a lot of value early in the season and then transition periods into the season.
Well, we're going to hit the ground rolling, but we're going to have to start with the somber stuff first, our in memoriam portion. There's going to be no Nadal. That was a tough blow for the Spaniard, for the people that wanted to see him play, obviously.
We're going to lead with Aslan Karatsev there. Jeez. R.I.P. Seriously. Rest up, King.
Not entirely. Terrible injury. But Zico, just start with you on this one. No Nadal here, and it's hard to imagine what the future is going to look like for him because he looked good early and he trained for this moment, had the micro tear on the muscle, but his future is in peril, and now it's, you know, not a matter of if he's going to retire, but when that's going to be. So your thoughts on the unfortunate injury again for Nadal?
I don't think I expected anything from him here. I know that he had been training to come back here, but I do think he actually looked better than I expected in the two matches we saw him play. So I don't know. I mean, if he's able to get himself healthy and play a few clay tournaments before Roland Garros, like I don't think we could really rule him out. I mean, it's not going to be the type of thing where we expect him to win, but I do think that getting to the semifinals or finals is always possible if he's healthy.
Yeah, you were a big tier one, tier two guy in terms of if Nadal can even prove that he's, you know, at that cut below the very best right now, the Djokovic's and the Alcaraz's, then why couldn't he believe in himself in clay? Pam, I know Nadal's meant a lot to you and your, you know, tennis fandom and following him, but, you know, he's somebody that's going to prioritize the process and prioritize his body at this point. And he said it pretty perfectly. I'm just not there yet. Best of five.
He's not there yet, and he has 5 months to get there because he was never training to come back to the Australian Open. He's still eye on the prize, one last shot. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets, if he does even make it to the French Open, Roland Garros, that could be his send off, because that's really all that matters to him is like maybe more titles on clay, but maybe he was using Australian Open as a step in, his foot in the door, and try to build up on some reps. I have one of the, I have a ticket for him to play that match with Carlos Alcaraz in Vegas. It was canceled last year and I had tickets to that.
Yeah.
I don't expect that to follow through anymore this year at all. I think
that's like, yeah, that's like worse than the Netflix curse, which I think I heard Ken say something about that, but I'm not sure.
No, definitely not me. I definitely didn't do any TikToks about it and get featured on Breakpoint without my face. No way.
That actually happened. Yeah, I know. Salt in the wound, but no, look, just wrapping up.
I should sue. I agree. I'm going to sue.
I check those terms and conditions on TikTok, especially. Kenny, just to kind of wrap up on this, when do you think we'll see him again would be the last question.
Well, first of all, Pam, I think you're going to see him at that exhibition. If Taylor Fritz can step into the ATP finals and play one set with Hubie Hurkacz with like a torn, his entire abs were torn and he couldn't serve, the money's right. Rafa's going to be there and he's not going to push himself. Also, I think it's great that tennis is going to be live on Netflix, but it's like a very, Indian Wells is, I don't know, it's a very strange time for it to happen, but I mean, I'm sure it'll be fun. I do want to take this time out to actually talk about Jordan Thompson. Because we've eulogized Rafa. I think what has been said already is very true. I think Pam's right. He's focusing on Roland Garros. He could play in the Australian Open if he wanted to. It just doesn't really make sense for him right now as he's trying to ramp back up to competition. And Zico's also right that he looked really good. He was looking better than he has looked in a couple years. Certainly not the guy that lost to Lloyd Harris on a bum leg. I mean, he looked pretty good and I was really excited to see what he could do this week. So it's very disappointing. But I mentioned Jordan Thompson, and he's a guy that I've really never thought was very good at tennis. But he played a great match against Rafa. He overcame a lot to come over, to come through on those match points down against Rafa, and he won. Yet no one's going to give him credit for that victory because Rafa was injured. He had a micro tear, as you guys said, which is ridiculous. It's a very minor injury. Same thing with Taylor Fritz beating Rafa. And we saw in Breakpoint how he was like, F off. I beat Rafa. Don't try to discredit me because he was injured. I think so. Some credit should go to Jordan Thompson for the win of his career. And I don't want people to just say, oh, well, it was against an injured at all. Because he was able to play. He was able to come up in that last game and nearly force a break when Thompson was serving for it. So, but yes, I think it's very disappointing because as you guys said, he was flattening out the forehand. He looked very dangerous. So it was very sudden to see him sort of get hurt again, but it's very sad.
These top guys do, I think, give credit. Like Nadal and Djokovic, when they lose, they're not making
it. I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about like everyone on Twitter or X. No, sorry. Well,
you gotta stay away from that stuff. Well, this is going to lead into our future discussion because there's a lot of storylines at this Australian Open coming up, but you know, look, we're looking at potentially title number 11 for Novak Djokovic down under. He's owned this slam when he's been playing in it. Zico, starting with this, who or what will be Djokovic's biggest obstacle? We'll get to the futures and some potential matchups and bracketology, but how would you answer this question? What would be the biggest obstacle in Nole's way?
I think it's Sinner. I looked at the bracket. I think that the winner of that Sinner Djokovic match is winning. I don't know if I'm spoiling this. My favorite bet in the tournament is Sinner to win, but I probably would say Djokovic is my pick to win, you know, outside of betting.
Pam, what do you think about in terms of its wrist injury? I know he's managed his body so well in one tournament when he hasn't been 100%, but is it a player like Sinner or maybe an early round, landmine, so to speak?
I have the exact same sentiments. If there was a player to knock off Djokovic before a final, it's going to be Sinner in potentially when they meet in the quarter. I'm not really worried about this wrist injury that he got at United Cup. I think he's kind of in the same level right now as like Nadal, where they're very acute of what their injuries and he's being risk averse. So I'm not going to say that like he is overstating what this wrist injury is, but he also has an eye on the prize. So if there was an opportunity for him to find like a rest period, it would be this. And more so than anybody on tour and probably in all of tennis ever, there's no better player who knows how to assess their injuries, knows what to do with their nutrition, knows how to handle their body better than Novak Djokovic. So I trust him to come into this at near 100%, if not 100%.
he'll do just what he needs to do to win those early matches too. He won't put on a show to have to play his best tennis. So Kenny, I'd ask you the same question. Also want to throw out there with bracketology, you know, the players don't look at the draws ever, but we do. And yeah, this one obviously stood out that he could face Ben Shelton in the fourth round. Still a lot of work for both players, especially Shelton, to get there. But looking at this and looking at that same question, how do you see it?
I mean, there's really not that much hard work for Ben Shelton to get there. Adrian Mannarino, probably his toughest match, although even then, Shevchenko, the way he's playing, could beat Mannarino. I think that match is going to happen. I'm going to say that, first of all, yes, the wrist injury is not a big deal. I think that everyone's overblowing it. I think there's always an excuse for why Djokovic loses. I think it was less about the wrist at the United Cup and more about the fact that he was just flat the whole match. He never really brought his level up. I know that he loves playing for Serbia, but yes, ADM did some things with the backhand slice down the line. Jim Courier talked about that a lot, the whole tournament, and he played really well. He only lost one point on his first serve. But, I mean, that says it all, right? I think Djokovic just wasn't really engaged in that match for whatever reason. I'm going to say there's going to be two tough matches for Novak Djokovic. And, again, I project him to face Taylor Fritz in the quarterfinals. I think ADM actually is going to beat Sinner. I think if Sinner beats ADM, then I agree with Zico that that's going to be a very difficult match. And I think Sinner could probably win that. But I'm going to give you two. One's going to be surprising. And one's not. The Ben Shelton one, not surprising. I think that's going to be a really tough match for him, especially since Ben Shelton's still going to be relatively fresh. He hasn't been playing amazing tennis this year, but we always do know he turns it on for these Grand Slams, at least the two hardcourt slams last year. The other match that's going to be very difficult for Novak is going to be this Alexei Popper in second round match. I know it's going to elicit laughter from some people, but we saw what happened last year with Taylor Fritz, who was clearly a better tennis player than Popper. And he lost in five sets. The crowd really played a factor there. And yes, Novak, he always loves the crowd, blah, blah, blah. But in those matches where he's getting into it with the crowd, there's a common denominator, and that is that we usually go to a deciding set or it's a very tight match. If the crowd's into it, that means Djokovic has let the opponent into it. And I do think Popperin's playing really good tennis. He got hurt is the only my only concern. He got a little hurt in, I think, the semifinals in Brisbane when he was knocked out to Roman. Maybe it was the quarters. I'm not quite sure how far he made it. But he looked really good that week. And I think with a big serve, yes, Djokovic, the best returner of all time, but Popperin has that magic in his racket. And when he's in Australia, he's a very difficult man to beat. So that could go four or five sets, I think, actually. But the only other time he's really going to be tested, we know he's going to dust Monfils. He's always done that. We know he's going to dust Fritz. He's probably going to dust ADM the second time in a row he plays him, if he plays him there. And Grigor, if he plays him in the final. But I think that Popperin match could be kind of difficult.
Well, I wanted to look at based on the odds going into this tournament, because there's been some movement based on the match last week and some other things that have happened. So these are, as of this morning, the top seven favorites to win the men's Australian Open. Pam, we're going to go Djokovic, then Alcaraz plus 350. Djokovic at even money. Sinner, Medvedev, Demonauer up there now. Zverev and Holger Rune at plus 3,100. So your initial thoughts on these numbers, other people that might not be there, where there might be value, not just in this bet, but, you know, to get to a quarter, get to a final even.
There's a couple of players automatically. Of course, Djokovic should be the favorite, plus 100. That's mega value. I would say Carlos Alcaraz at number two is overvalued. He should not be in the top three based off of this draw, based off of it being the Australian Open, based off of his current condition. I think Demonar, just because he's one of those guys that does well in Australia, he turns up here early on in the season, 24-1. Not that I expect him to win, but if we're talking like pure value, sure, maybe there's something there. But I would say for the most part, it's pretty accurate. Rune could be interesting just because I really do like the coaching change that he's had with Boris Becker. Injuries, of course, are always a thing. But other than that, the only one that really screams out is Alcaraz, number two. Love him. Doesn't belong as number two.
Yeah, hasn't played, along with Sinner and Medvedev, no official matches before Zico. I'd say the Medvedev number to me seems like it's a good value area. This is a guy that's played pretty well down here. I know he lost to Korda last year, but has made a couple of finals and seems like he's someone that could dive right back into it and do well. And I think 1,100 screams out some value.
Yeah, I agree. I think that my final would be Sinner or Djokovic to beat Medvedev. So I think that there's good value there because you'll be able to hedge it even if he doesn't win, guarantee a little bit of money. I'm actually out on Holger Rune here. I think that he has some landmines early in the tournament, like some really tough early matchups. I don't even think Nishioka is a really easy opponent in the first round for him. Like, I know that he had the run and, you know, lost to Dimitrov in that final, but he has to prove himself after what he did the second half of last season. Like, I'm not ready to consider him an elite player. So that's one that I would consider out for me. And I don't know, like, Alcaraz, I do think is going to have a big season. That's not much of a hot take, but I do think playing without Juan Carlos Ferrero here is going to be hard for him. That's kind of been his rock throughout this early rise of his career.
Yeah. And Kenny did not put on this graphic, Grigor Dimitrov plus 4,200. Also, I know you've come around all the way around on Casper Ruud. He's plus 6,000 along with Andre Rublev. Tsitsipas is about 5,500. So with that in mind, your thoughts on the men's futures?
Yeah, I actually have Ruud beating Zverev, which is it's going to be a very, very good match. Oh, but I do think he has relatively no issues getting to the fourth round and playing Zverev. And no, he's not going to beat Carlos Alcaraz. But look, I think Grigor Dimitrov could. I think Grigor Dimitrov has beaten Carlos Alcaraz before. And you want to talk about landmines for Daniil Medvedev. Grigor, first of all, Felix, if he does end up getting to that third round, which he might not even make it out of the first round with the way he's playing right now, but if he finds his form here, wins a couple matches, he really should have beaten Medvedev at the US or at the Australian Open 2 years ago when he had that magical night, one of the matches of his career. And then Med has lost twice out of the last five meetings with Grigor Dimitrov, and one of those was a three-setter in the loss. Grigor's loss. That's a matchup that gives him a lot of issues. He hasn't played a lot of tennis leading up to this. Grigor has. Grigor looks really good. I think this is one of the levels of his career right now. He just looks that good. But I think this could be a really tricky draw. And I also agree with Zico on Rune. I'm out on Rune. That Arthur Fils match could be difficult. The Jera match could be difficult. He's played really well. There's a lot of difficult, tricky opponents that he might have the audacity to overlook here, with his brain. But I do think if Rune's out of the equation, I mean, even not, we saw Grigor beat Rune. He's going to have to come through a murderer's row, and he's probably going to have nothing left if he gets to the final. But I don't know who's laughing because I'm not looking, but Grigor Dimitrov is playing top five tennis right now. But I do think that to win the third quarter at plus 400 is great value on Grigor. A little interest in Hubie as well, honestly, at plus 900. I thought he added some elements to his return at that United Cup that makes him a little more dangerous because that's obviously the weakness of his game. But it's going to be difficult for him to get through that quarter as well with a bunch of giants there. But again, like, he could probably beat Holger Rune if Rune ends up getting past Fils, but we'll see. I mean, I think that Hubie is just a tough guy to trust in Grand Slams. You guys would probably agree with that. He's except for Wimbledon, this guy's never there second week of a Grand Slam.
Pam, I did want to mention before we get to the women's side, a lot of love for, and he won the title for Grigor Dimitrov, but do you see value in not just him this tournament, but beyond 30, you know, into his 30s now, having his best start to a season, best run in about 7 years. So
I guess I don't trust Dimitrov in a best of five to run deep in for a 2 week period. He's doing well now, but those are short stint tournaments. I think in the long run, I mean, yeah, he could be maybe early on, like, money line bets to pair it up with somebody else to win these earlier matches. I think he could definitely have a great season. I love it what he's doing, but do I trust him to, like, make a final or to do well against, I mean, literally just like Sinner or Novak? No. I think in the long run, short term, well, I would probably stop betting him probably in, like, the quarterfinals, semifinals.
Okay. That still would be a
Grand Slam semifinalist. Well, last made one in 2019 before the pandemic for the folks out there.
He was also scorching hot at the end of last year. Like, we did something with one of the final shows. You were asking us who to look out for next year, and I said it's boring because he's old, but I did say Dimitrov, like, he was playing really well.
Boring.
That's true. I mean, when he's feeling it, when he's healthy, and Pam's, you know, reservations are correct. I mean, the body has really been what's held him back, and his brain at times, but the confidence he has right now. And the fact that he he's looked really healthy. I actually thought physically he was going to wane when coming into that final against Rune, and especially with how physical that match was, he looked awesome. He's looked really good to finish matches. So I think his body and his mind are better than they have been really since the last time we saw him make a slam semi in 2019.
I do remember that Zico Oliver Grigor just couldn't get enough last year.
Big Grigor guy down there.
All right, before we get to the picks, the women's side of the futures of the Australian Open, Iga Swiatek plus 220. the favorite here, Sabalenka, the defending champ, plus 400. Rybakina plus 500. Then Gauff, Pagula is where it drops off. Zhang and Osaka, number seven. So interesting stuff there. But Zico, it does scream to me, and that's another topic for another part of the discussion, but they're handicapping it like we're looking at a big four in women's tennis, because there is a sharp decline once you get past the Rybakina Coco Gauff range.
Yeah, and I actually do have Zhang to make the semifinals. I just think that she's going to be, you know, a breakout candidate at this tournament, has so much power. And like, I think that her draw is really favorable. But yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to say that there's a big four in tennis right now. Coco kind of crashed the party with that US Open win. I still think there's kind of a gap between the top three and her, but I also think there's a huge gap between one and two. Like, I think that when Iga is playing the way she has been, it's really not even close. Like, I think we're talking about someone that's going to go down like in tennis history as one of the greats. So you're getting her in the middle of a really good stretch since October, really, where she kind of fixed that forehand, really became unbeatable. Yeah. I don't think she's dropped a set in quite some time, except unless it's to Caroline Garcia. So she's been unbelievable. And I do
and the
think
mixed doubles
looking
at pair of, you know, we've learned she can't play doubles.
Well, you know what? I thought she held her own in some rallies with men, so I thought it was impressive.
Yeah, she held her own, and she cried after a loss.
So I would also point out that what Zico says is true because of the consistency factor. You can say Sabalenka and Rybakina, and even, I mean, maybe not Coco, given the track record, but in one match could beat her, but you're going to bet, you know, if this is a betting show, the smart money is on the most consistent player, and that's been Iga. That said, Kenny, before I turn it over to you, I think Rybakina is going to have a big year. I was looking at it, and I think she's going to be the one to, you know, she finished number four last year. It felt like an underwhelming year. I think she was pretty close to having a better year. I think we could see her be dangerous in Australia and beyond.
Yeah, I do too. I have some friends on Gambling X that are big Rybakina haters or disbelievers for whatever reason. I think that she is, I think she's inarguably the second best player right now. And I think she could easily finish the year at number one. I mean, you know, not getting the Wimbledon points, I think sort of messed with her ranking coming up. And I do think, I mean, look, she lost last night to Alexandrova, who is, I mean, probably a player that could be top 15, top 10 if she really scheduled herself correctly and played with a little more consistency. Also, she was tired coming off that Adelaide win. The only thing that really prevents me from winning here is, apparently we're talking about curses with the first episode of Breakpoint, which I, for some reason, they picked the handlebar mustache guy over me to show, which was weird, but then they used my TikTok anyway. Look, Adelaide, apparently winning Adelaide, I didn't know this, is a curse. You can't win the Australian Open after you win Adelaide. So that kind of scares me off of Rybakina here for whatever reason. But I do think she's going to have a really big season. I think she's playing excellently. She dusted Sabalenka. Sabalenka had no answers in that final in Adelaide, which was shocking. And I just think she frustrated her with how many balls she made. So she's really cleaned up the baseline game. I think when we're talking about the odds, Zico's spot on with Zhang. I think she's playing unbelievable tennis. She's got really no one in her way. The two dark horses, which are, you know, they're easy dark horses that I'm sure everyone's going to throw out, but I think they carry a lot of validity this year. Osaka has looked, I mean, look, she's not moving very well. She's struggled a little bit on return, but on serve, she's looked just as good as she's ever looked. I think she's going to be very, very difficult to beat these 2 weeks. And also, Emma Raducanu looked really good in Auckland. Yeah. Really probably should have beaten Elina Svitolina, who almost beat Coco Gauff. You know, if it weren't for some physical ailments, maybe she does. And I thought Raducanu looked unbelievable. Now, again, you know, we're talking a lot about the stamina here required for 2 weeks. She's obviously done it before and she's young, but a lot of injuries, a lot of surgeries, and she just didn't seem to have the stamina in Auckland. So I don't know if I trust her to finish out 2 weeks, but she's going to be very difficult to beat as well. She's playing a really high level, and she's in that section of the draw with Pagula, who's looked kind of bad, you know, over the first couple weeks of the season. And she's also in that Qinwen Zhang section as well. And obviously we've never seen Qinwen Zhang make a semifinal of a Grand Slam. So, but hey, I mean, Magda Linette made the semis here last year. Anything is possible. And I think that Zhang probably does make that semifinal if it's not Raducanu, who produces her level out of nowhere. But in terms of future markets, I think Raducanu and Osaka, if you're going to swing, you want to swing with those guys.
Yeah, former champs.
Another one is Andreeva. I think she's just, the wins have been piling up for her. Yeah. The talent's always there.
Yeah, she killed Samsonova.
She was really good the last tournament, and I think that that part of the bracket is pretty open. I think Ange Jabeur is probably going to get upset early by whoever she faces in rounds two or three, and I do think there's an opening for Andreeva to kind of make her first, you know, big run at a major.
slam champ within 2-3 years. I mean, that's how I see it. So we'll see.
That's how the odds makers seem to see it too. She's minus 900 every match.
She's always like 10th on the odds board every tournament.
Yeah.
I am all taking notes on your Jing bets.
She's good.
That's a sleeper for sure. All right, more tennis bets here. We're on the Tennis Channel YouTube, Tennis Bets Twitter, and Tennis.com Facebook, as well as the Tennis Channel Podcast Network. I wanted to wrap up this show with a ton of your best bets and plays and some thoughts on other matches for the first round. I feel like they really did a good job with some exciting matchups this year. So we got some picks, and I want to get the conflict out of the way first. So, Pam, I'm going to play your bet, and then we're going to see which one of these guys disagrees with you. But we're going to start with this one. Mannarino minus 1.5 sets, minus 120 versus Stan the Man.
So I was actually going to text you, like, maybe I want to use this as like a discussion rather than a pick for the show, because this really just comes down to Stan the Man. He is the type of player that needs to have reps. He needs to have rhythm. And he had a walkover in November and hasn't really done anything since. Mannarino is not the player, when you are out of rhythm and don't have those reps, to go into facing in the first round, because he is a backboard and will return everything. He's going to generate those long rallies. And what Wawrinka is 38 years old. I just don't think he has that type of level of stamina to sustain that in the first round. Now, if you told me that this was like maybe like the third, fourth round, then he's already built some of that rhythm up. But Mannarino, he made the field. He made the final in the Sofia Open. He's a backboard. And that really is just like he's going to wear Wawrinka down. So I would expect this to be like a Mannarino win scenario. But I was kind of having hesitations there after I sent it to you.
Before we have Zico dismantle everything I'm about to say here, I was thinking about this too. It's Stan with his backhand, the power, and we all know about it. But Mannarino playing his best tennis, having one of his career breakthroughs, the career breakthrough this age in the game. I don't know if he's going
to get two of those.
Yeah. I don't know if he is going to give Stan the power that Stan kind of relies on to just rip those backhands. So we'll see. But Zico sees it. He's going with the veteran, the experience, the former Aussie champ, Stan to win money line.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like Stan, we haven't seen much of him in the last few months, but I do think he just played, you know, some practice sets with Alcaraz. I think he's going to be ready to go. I actually think it's the opposite, where I think that Stan in the first or second round of these tournaments has the energy and has, you know, the ability to go out there and win. I think he runs out of steam a little bit later on because of his age, but I think that he has the ability to just overpower Mannarino, who I know is a really good smaller tournament player, but we haven't really seen it in majors. I don't think he's going to have just the firepower you need to beat Stan, who's also, I think he'll have the crowd. He kind of always does.
Well, let's talk about a guy that has stamina and firepower early and that might wither out, because Kenny, you see a different player going the opposite direction, and another remarkable reversal of fortune for you, showing that you can put your differences aside. Echeverry's name was dragged through the mud a little bit last year on this show, but it's 2024. It's a new year. And
was it?
you think he will beat Andy Murray money line. And why is that?
Well, I first want to say that I'm not totally on the Echeverry train, because he did cost me dearly the other night. He played an excellent match fighting against Shevchenko, and then just absolutely, there were two service games in that match where he just made three or four unforced errors to lose a break very quickly. And he absolutely crumbled at the end of that match. And I probably will never forgive him for that, but he has beaten Andy Murray before. He's won a set in both of their, at least a set in both of their meetings. Andy Murray has no form to speak of at the moment. He played in those exhibitions. He actually lost to Chilich in one of those exhibition matches, which again, like, yeah, exhibition, but we've seen sometimes, you know, especially Francis Tiafoe, Casper Ruud come to mind, where players just like don't really look like they're with it in the exhibitions, or, you know, you can see some signs of some wear and tear or some bad form. I mean, Murray had lost 7 of his last 8 matches going into that last exhibition match. And yeah, I mean, I one of those was to Echeverry. I think Echeverry makes this a very physical match. I think he's playing really good tennis. And I think he wins this pretty easily. It's a pretty easy call for me. I think he should actually be the favorite. I think Andy Murray, even you look back at last year, the amount of escapes that guy had to make against pretty middling competition, you know, no disrespect whatsoever to Thanasi Kokkinakis, but like, definitely should have. I mean, he definitely should not have won that match. And yeah, I also want to just say I didn't get my opinion in on the Mannarino match, but I think that's an easy win for Adrian Mannarino. I think back to that second or third round match of the U.S. Open last year that Stan had to play against Echeverry, and Echeverry made that a very difficult match, and I still don't know how he won that match. I mean, it was, again, Echeverry, just small brain, you know, whatever, but I do feel like that's a match where he had to make a lot of balls. He made a lot of errors, and Mannarino is going to get a lot back. And, you know, yes, he looked really good against Zverev, and he won a match, and then he got dusted by Casper Ruud and Hubi Hurkacz. You know, I think they're bona fide top 10 players right now. I know the rankings might not show it for either, but, I do feel as though those are the types of matches he struggles in. Stan can produce that level, but will he? No, I don't think so. But yes, Echeverry, I mean, Murray hasn't played good tennis in like 5 months, and he's old. And, you know, yes, I mean, the crowd's going to be on his side, but Echeverry is going to make this a very physical match. I don't think Murray's going to have much fun.
Yeah, calling the guy you pick small brain is interesting. So,
what am I supposed to do on this show? Lie? Tell lies? I'm going to tell the facts.
I don't have the official number, but an over might be a play too, because Murray just seems like win or lose, he's in these dogfights.
And small brain, touch of varies, well. Obviously.
Yeah. Zico, on the women's side, an interesting pick for you given the previous future odds. You got Garcia even money over Naomi.
Yeah, I mean, these are just both really good servers. I just think that I trust Garcia to win a few more points given she's played more tennis recently. I think that these conditions suit her really well, and I just kind of – I view Osaka as a player to fade until she proves herself as well. I think it's not quite it's a worse situation than the Holger Rune one I mentioned before. But I think a lot of people are going to be betting Osaka because of how many times she's won this event, how many times she's won in general throughout her career. But she's got to prove it. She has not played much tennis over the last few years.
Brutal draw for her to get Garcia first.
We'll also be betting Osaka because I said she might win the tournament. Also, they're listening to our show, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, Kenny, before I forget, though, you had one bet you had that was your favorite bet, and I know you're going to be also sprinkling money line, too. So you're going to go to Pat Morales. I don't know what happened, what the storyline is with you and Laheco. I'll have to, you know, get caught up on Raw or whatever. But you got Zapata Morales, 8.5 games, and there's rumors that you're going to be sprinkling the money line as well.
There are rumors circulating that I will be on the money line. The WWE put together a great package for me and Lehechka before this match. I do feel as though he's just not a very good tennis player. I've said this many times. He's been one of my favorite players to bet against. I think he makes a lot of unforced errors. There are those few moments where he's completely dialed in, hitting lines, serving well. And those happen during all of his matches. And I don't think this is going to be straightforward either way. I think that Bernabe is going to win two sets. I like him to win two sets at +310. He's beaten Lehechka before. He's taken a top 10 player and Tommy Paul to 5 sets at a Grand Slam. Lehechka made a quarterfinal here last year. The biggest win was over Felix Auger-Aliassime. He did win in 5 sets over Cam Nori after Nori seemed to pick up some sort of ailment after the third set, and that match completely turned around. But I don't think that really any, I mean, that's his one really crowning achievement is that slam run. He's had bad US Opens before. He's had bad French Opens. He's just, you want to talk about small brain players. This guy's right up there with Francisco Cerúndolo in terms of his shot selection. I just don't think a guy like Zapata Morales, who, as we know from watching Alexander Bublik's amazing podcast with Benoit Paire and Casper Ruud, we know he's going to fight. We know he's going to be screaming. That's just not a good situation for Yuri Lehechka. This guy's going to get a lot of balls back into play. He's going to really frustrate Lehechka, who wants to be able to hit through and hit for winners. And again, even this week, he's won 3 matches. Nicolas Jarry played terribly. Dusan Lajovic is Dusan Lajovic. And then he beat a guy named Andrew Walton, who all of us have never heard of before, a wild card who's Australian. So, there's no reason for him to be minus 2,000 in any match. I don't care if he's playing Andrew Walton. He wasn't even minus 2,000 in that match. This is a very troublesome match for Yuri Lehechka with the matchup. And no, will he win? Probably, but I don't think it's going to be very easy for Lehechka. I think Zapata Morales is going to have his shine in this match, as we like to say in the wrestling biz.
That game spread is, it's almost
puts him in a
He's 22, by the way. I just have to say that, like, not accomplishing much at majors isn't that surprising.
Well, yeah. Right.
Morales is a top 40 tennis player. Also, he's still very relatively young as well. And I also want to just say before Zico roasts me and Pam as well, that This guy has a lot more hitting power than most people give him credit for, because he's a clay quarter for his career. But we've seen him actually have some success on grass. And
The stream got too much.
Discounting him because of the purpose.
Kenny muted him.
Kenny, I didn't mute him, but Kenny froze a little bit there. But I'll just I just love the fact that you've gone full circle and now you're big on the clay court guys, given where we were.
No, I'm not.
I just
have two picks. I mean, I'm just supposed to try to win. That's what I'm trying to do.
And he's going to get invited down to Argentina in February for sure.
Anywhere but Argentina. All right. Anywhere. I'll go to Chile. Go to Chile Open. I was a virtual spectator to Chile Open 1 year.
You were. During COVID. All right. So, Pam, you have a parlay pick here, and this is kind of a theory one. You got Shelton Tsitsipas to win on the money line, -120. I know this is kind of a strategy for you early. Find some favorites that you like and get the value that you like. Tsitsipas has got an interesting one against the Hugo Boss boy himself, Matteo Berrettini. So
if this doesn't work out, this to me just like screamed mega easy. So I'm just like rolling with it. It's Ben Shelton plus Stefano Tsitsipas -120 money line parlay. Shelton is playing Roberto Bautista Agut. Agut missed a lot of the 2023 season because of a horse riding incident. Hey, baby, don't do extra activities when you're a pro player. I don't know. Been playing since October, but he has been really rusty. If you watch him, he's looking like lethargic. He's lacking that touch in the feel. Is that something that he can generate? Absolutely. But getting Ben Shelton right out of the gate is probably more difficult task than understood. Tsitsipas over Berrettini. Berrettini hasn't played since the US Open second round. That it's like that easy of a handicap for me. You have nothing to go for. You still don't have that. Neither it's going to be the player who has the better of the worst backhand, and I'm going to trust Tsitsipas in this spot because I just don't think Berrettini has enough to contend when he hasn't been playing at all in the last few months.
That's an interesting matchup, but the fact is that Berrettini has not played. I think the other side of it, and that's where I'm going to bring Zico in here, because he's going to push back a little bit again on one of your picks here. But Zico is going with the Bautista Agut plus 1.5 sets, 1.5 sets against Shelton at plus 115. So explain yourself on this one. Shelton lost his first match to Sofia and has looked good so far, but in this next tournament. But why RBA in this spot?
Yeah, I also hate to say it, but I had Berrettini set spread. I'm looking at Berrettini set spread. They weren't available. I just think that match is going to have like four tiebreakers, and I think that you're better off just taking the chance on the underdog. But I just think Bautista Agut is a really rock solid player, like really smart player. It's played a ton of matches. I think that we're all moving a little too fast on Ben Shelton. I know that the talent is remarkable off the charts, but I do think that like point construction, he needs a lot of help. I think that return wise, he's still not quite there. And, you know, even for as good of his serve is, as powerful as it is, he doesn't have a top 10 hole percentage in the ATP right now. Like, I think that there are still things he needs to work on. I think he will figure them out probably by the end of the year. I think like maybe the US Open is when you're going to get the best of Shelton. I just think this is going to be a really tough match against an experienced player.
And Zico, what happened in Auckland to round one to Roberto Bautista? Did he win?
Yeah, and that's why I've been fading Shelton, by the way.
Did RBA win round one of Auckland?
Yeah. I knew
who was his opponent in that match? Was it Roberto Carballes Baena? Okay.
Hey, tennis players, say what you want about Kenny, but you know where you stand with him. That's pretty good. You know, it's a love-hate relationship. A few more picks, and we're going to have to wrap this up a couple more minutes on the show.
I think that Shelton wins that match. I also think the set spread could be in play. So I don't want to agree with you both, but I am. But I do think Shelton wins. I mean, he's not going to lose that match. Beating RBA is a rite of passage to every young American tennis player. They all kill him. And yeah. Berrettini is also going to beat Tsitsipas. If you didn't watch him at the United Cup, go back and watch. This guy looked terrible. His back is still giving him a lot of issues. He can't serve. He lost a lot of miles an hour. That's a very – I know that Berrettini hasn't played either, but I have more physical concerns about Tsitsipas.
Pam, that might be the issue, is that both these, it's like the walking wounded match. Both these guys aren't exactly healthy.
I'm going to, none of these are like, these are like first glance looks. I do love Shelton, and you know I love my money line parlays. So yeah. I'm going to probably revert here, but definitely Shelton in the money line. I'm not worried about him losing this match either.
Okay. We got a comment here. Kenny is an encyclopedia. I think that's a compliment, but we'll have to see. I don't know what version it is there. All right, a couple more picks before we wrap this one up. Kenny likes Kecmanovic on the set spread. So we are going to weigh some sets on this one.
Yeah, Ketsmanovic, it's so weird to me that he's 1-2 to start this season because he's looked unbelievable. You guys remember 2 years ago at the Australian Open when he came out. I mean, really that whole first 3-4 months of the season, this guy almost beat Carlos in Miami. He looked unbelievable. He's ripping the ball right now incredibly well. He lost a very difficult match to Jack Draper, who, as we saw last night, even though after a 3-hour and 30-minute match, looked great. I mean, this guy's playing the tennis of his career, and I think he's going to crack the top 10 this year, Jack Draper. But, you know, Ketsmanovic, I think, has looked really good. And I think that's Juan Nuki to end last season. Yes, he was unbelievable. He's since come out in a challenger, lost to a guy I've never heard of, and then lost to Diaz Acosta in qualifying for Adelaide. Not to mention, Ketsmanovic has a 2-1 record against him. He's won 4 out of the last 5 sets played. And again, at a Grand Slam where Ketsmanovic has much more experience than Watanuki, and given the fact that he's playing incredibly well, one of the things I like to do especially in the early tournaments is you like to look for guys that odds makers just aren't watching play tennis. I don't think anyone's actually ever watched a Ketsmanovic match yet this year. And I think the line tells you all you need to know about that. He's playing so much better than a guy favored by, I mean, he's a -220 favorite, I believe, in this match. That's absolutely outrageous. I think he's playing close to a top 30 level right now. And I think we'll see it in Australia.
All right, Zico, your last pick. And I got to ask you about this one. Wozniacki, you're weighing -166 against last year's semifinalist Magda Linette. So this is a lot for a position, I would say, of Wozniacki still in her comeback. But explain yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I was hoping to get the game spread. They weren't available yet. That's where I'd still be going with this because I don't really want to lay -166. But Wozniacki's 2-0 against her in her career. Obviously, she took a lot of time off, but I thought she looked really good when she came back last season. She had some really close losses. Two good players. I think that she's going to be in better shape in 2024 than she was in 2023, just more prepared all around. So I think that this is just a really a tough matchup for Linette, who I don't think had any business making it that far last season to begin with. So I just think this is a good spot for Wozniacki, and she lost a good match against Svitolina last week. I think that this is, you know, a player that could have a big season. I think that we'll be looking at her as a top 30 player at the end of the year.
All right, fair enough. And then Pam, your last pick, you're going with Big Banks, the Eubanks show after
maybe
his
you guys will finally agree with something. Maybe Eubanks on the underdog money line +110 over Taro Daniel. I actually like the over on this as well. I think this could be like a potential for a 5-setter. I mean, Zach said it at the beginning of the show. What does well here at the tournament? Big servers and solid returners. Well, this is kind of like a clash of both, but you're getting Eubanks, who's like a very aggressive player. He has a strong serve. He's suited better more for like grass and fast court, but he's 6'7". He's going to get a lot of free points off of this game. And because Daniel, look at the players that he has faced. He does not win against big time servers. He had losses to Shelton, losses to Raonic. Raonic was still in his comeback. Like, hello. I like the over because at least Daniel did push Shelton to a tiebreak in Tokyo. Granted, that's a faster court surface, but I really just think that Eubanks potentially is like, this is more of a coin flip. So if you're giving me plus money or more of a coin flip, I'm going to look for consider that value.
Okay.
I disagree with you both. I think somehow I've actually watched Magda Linette play all 3 of her matches this year. I think she actually has played a lot better than the record would show. And you want to talk about a good loss? I mean, all her losses have been like good losses. They've been very difficult for her opponents. I think she's going to win that match. And then Eubanks, I still think is a little overvalued after last year. I don't want to say it was a flash in the pan because he's a great guy, Tennis Channel commentator, and a really talented tennis player, but he's really not looked very good over the last couple of months. Taro Daniel, I don't like Taro. I like Chris Eubanks way more than Taro Daniel. I do not like Taro Daniel, but I think he's going to win this match. He has a tendency against some of the players like this who are fading, but they're still sort of overranked to win these matches. We saw him do it in Miami a couple of times over the last couple of years. So I think this is a tough match for Eubanks, but Grand Slams, as you guys have been saying, and we've all been saying, it's a lot different than a best of 3. So maybe Eubanks pulls this out. But that I think what Pam said is true about a lot of a lot of holds. The over here I think could definitely be in play because Daniel's going to make that difficult match.
One last one before we go, because we have a fan comment on this question, and I did have it in my notes. But Chorich Tiafo, this is our fan question. Chorich is an underdog against Tiafo. I feel like there's going to be some people that say yes, there is a chance he wins this match, but Zico, we'll go around the horn starting with you.
Yeah, I really got to hop off, but my short answer is yes. And I also think that the Eubanks match, I fear for Rublev in the second round, whoever he faces there.
Okay. Quickly, Kenny, before we wrap up.
Yeah, hashtag fade foe. I think he's going to lose that match. If he doesn't lose that match, I think he loses the next round to Tomas Machach, who's been unbelievable, this guy, since the last 6 months. I think that's a very difficult draw for foe. He would have been much better off playing a qualifier in the first round, finding some form. Mm-hmm. Don't like him here. I mean, I never like him in Australia. He's never been a fast starter to seasons. But I don't think he's really playing particularly well.
Yeah, Pam, I think this is a great value spot for George. You talk about value players that maybe aren't as consistent, but have that top end potential. He's won a Masters event within the last 2 years. So
beyond that, George is really great with redirecting. And that's exactly what Tiafoe can provide. So he's going to be like a really good returner in this spot. I would definitely consider George as the underdog. I have to do a little bit more digging because I didn't put that on my list. But yeah, I like that out of the gate.
Well, we lost Zico, but I think he'll be back next week when we do tennis bets a couple times next week during the Australian Open. Kenny Ducey, Pamela Maldonado, thanks for joining. Hey, this was fun. We're going to keep this going, and we'll see how right or wrong we are. There was some good synergy on today's show, so some building blocks for this new 2024.
Yeah, sorry to disagree at the end there with both of my fellow panelists, but I do think it's going to be a great Australian Open, and a lot of good points were made today. And also, if I'm going to absolutely be judging if you guys on the West Coast are not at least staying up till 2 a.m. during the Australian Open, because I will be up getting my bacon, egg, and cheese at 8:30 in the morning after all the matches are over, and then going to sleep till 4 and then doing it all over for 2 weeks. So
I changed my schedule. I am on Australian Open time. Starting probably like on Tuesday, Wednesday, though. I don't really care for like the first round matches. I need to see at least the second round. And then once Djokovic comes on board, woo, I'm awake.
Yeah. Yeah, second week's always easier for sleep, but people are concerned about my well-being because I'm asleep from 8 a.m. till 2 p.m. No one can reach me. But it's all about this right here.
Yeah, we'll get a couple wellness checks on you, make sure you're okay. But for Kenny Ducey, Pamela Maldonado, and Zachary Cohn, I'm your host, Mitch Michaels. Thanks for watching or listening to Tennis Bets. We're on the Tennis Channel Podcast Network as well. We're back next week, same time, same place. We've got a lot to discuss on the Australian Open on YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook. Enjoy the gambling season. Have fun out there. And thank you for watching and listening to Tennis Bets.